Hello, hello, and welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast, where we interview business entrepreneurs, tech startups, and anyone that wants to strive in business. And today we have a guest that I actually bumped into in LinkedIn, where I meet a lot of people and potential guests. But this is a very notable guest, actually. Talks about entrepreneurship and business. Haven Meltzer. He's from California. He was CEO of Sports One Marketing, a firm he founded with Warren Moon. Meltzer is a public speaker and an author of the bestsellers Connected to Goodness and Compassionate Capitalism. He was honored by Variety as Sports Humanitarian of the Year and is the recipient of the Ellis Island Medal of Honor. And David, welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. Looking forward to inspiring and hopefully impacting many people with some good stories, lessons, and advice.
So, Dave, one of the things that captured me was your content. You have a lot of video content, with a lot of interviews, conversations. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, you know, I have a very eclectic background. I like to call myself kind of the Forrest Gump of entrepreneurship. I started my career by going to law school, and instead of becoming a lawyer, I worked in the internet. I sold legal research online. The company that I work for sold for $3.4 billion in 1995. Despite my mom telling me I should be a real lawyer, I got into the internet and then worked my way to the Silicon Valley, where I assisted in raising a couple hundred million dollars for a wireless proxy server company called EveryPath, and then actually got hired as the CEO of the world's first smartphone, the world's first Samsung-manufactured Windows CE device, not an iPhone, but a Windows device. And in 99, we won Best of Comdex and CTIA and a variety of other things, and was a multimillionaire, and ended up semi-retiring as I got kicked out of Samsung because they found out that I was just a good salesperson. I wasn't a great CEO, and I became an entrepreneur, bought real estate stocks, and met a guy named Lee Steinberg and became COO of Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, the most notable sports agency in the world. And there I met a guy named Warren Moon. Eventually, I became CEO of that agency. We made the movie Jerry Maguire about our firm, and we're involved in a variety of other big, big projects. But Warren and I, we spun off a marketing, media, and sponsorship company about 11 years ago, specifically to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. In the last 3 years, build my own brand, authored 4 bestsellers, as you suggested. I have the number one entrepreneur podcast called The Playbook. I have a top digital business show called Elevator Pitch with Entrepreneur Magazine. And speak around the world. I have an executive coaching business in which I inspire others and really live my life to impact others, to be happy. It's really a simple mission and a lifetime mission that I think is much needed in these times today.
So why did you choose to start a cookie company? Why cookies? What was that moment like? Or?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, Santiago. I don't have that story of, like, you know, I grew up wanting to be a baker, right? As I told you, I can't even bake at all. I like cookies. I like to eat cookies. And when I don't know. I just, for whatever reason, I just landed on, let's open up a cookie shop. And then I did a little bit of research. I learned about Insomnia Cookies, started in 2002 by a University of Pennsylvania business student, grew it to like 150 locations, recently sold to Krispy Kreme for like at a valuation of about a $500 million. So the business mind in me, and again, that's my passion. Business is my passion, not necessarily cookies. It kind of clicked for me as like, okay, it's a business that scales. It's a relatively simple business, right? We're making cookies. There's not a lot of moving pieces like there are in other businesses. It's something that other businesses will acquire down the road if you can grow. And that was kind of it. And now also, one of the things that I love about this business is it's a happy business. People, seeing the reactions of people coming into the store, just huge smiles, the reactions of when people take their first bite of Max's chocolate chip cookie or, you know, the peanut butter and jelly, it's a fun place to work. And I think that's really cool because there's a lot of businesses out there where you just don't get that energy.
Which is why your sign makes a lot of sense.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Your concept and everything. Wow. You know, it's interesting you say that because obviously, like, there's just trends in foods that happen every so often, every couple of years. You know, first it was like the donuts.
Yes.
Now I've been seeing like the whole trend with cookies. I've seen on Instagram new cookie shops in New York, now South Florida with Batch. Why now with cookies? Is there a reason? Is there something that just...
Well, I mean, I think you did. You hit it on the head. 5 years ago, you look at, there was that cupcake craze, right? I think that kind of kicked it off. Then the donut thing followed after that. And now I think we're just coming into this wave of cookie shops. I have no idea as to why, other than, you know, millennials love experiences. I mean, maybe we're helping drive that. But I think what's interesting is, and I've done this, you know, you poll 100 people, would you prefer a, you know, delicious, warm baked, fresh baked cookie, or would you prefer ice cream? It's about a 50-50 split, but let's just say it's 60-40, more people like ice cream than cookies. But you go to most cities and you look around, Fort Lauderdale being one of them, you have 3 ice cream places on Las Olas. You know, you have, you know, within 5 miles of here, you probably have a total of 5 to 6 ice cream shops, but no place that just does cookies. So I think there's market potential, market opportunity for cookie shops like ours to come into a market like this and thrive. And that's not to say that I think a city like Fort Lauderdale could support multiple cookie shops, just like it supports multiple ice cream shops.
What do you know about real estate now that you did not know before?
Well, it's a lot more work than what I thought.
You could not have done it part-time?
No. there's no such a thing as doing it part-time. It's a lot more work. I never imagined, even though I used to be a housing counselor for first-time buyers. I used to, you know, work for a company in Miami that, you know, I did the whole short sales, loan modifications, all of that. And the experience that I gained working for them, it was amazing. But it was nothing, you know, I was still working 9 to 5. Monday through Friday. Now that I'm on my own, it's a whole different animal.
Yeah, schedule's different.
Absolutely.
You could work from like 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. or the next day from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m.
Absolutely.
So that's something that, including myself, obviously, yes, I do have some, you know, set hours and everything, but sometimes the hours could be very, very different. And like you were saying, like you had a steady paycheck, you know, you had that thing to rely on just in case if your husband, something happened. But what it turned out to be pretty good, you're one of the top producers at your brokerage.
I am. Yeah.
How did you do that?
Well, first of all, and I've said this in many occasions, I can't take all the credit. I mean, God has really blessed me in many ways, right? The fact that I'm very passionate and goal-driven has helped me a lot, but also the experiences from the past. I mean, you can't just go take an exam, do the hours, get a license, and then boom, all of a sudden, you know,
you become a millionaire.
Yeah, it doesn't happen like that. And I haven't reached that level. Yeah, but I'm doing more than okay. And I like it where I'm at, and I like it where I'm going, right? But definitely my experiences from the past, now is like the puzzle. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It makes sense why I did that job. Oh, okay. Now I'm putting all those experiences all together, and I'm applying all of that here. You know, my experience in sales, my experiences where I work with a salary, yeah, but it was very low, and my main income, it was coming from my commission. So that made me more like I really have to hustle if I want to be able to make it at the end of the month. So now it's like I don't have that set monthly income, so it's all hustle.
These social media enclaves, I mean, might be more important than like TV advertising or radio advertising at times.
I think so. I mean, it just makes more sense to me that, because you're able to attribute all this stuff. I hate to use that word, but all the traffic that converts, you can say, hey, this traffic converted and they searched for these terms and then they came onto the website and bought immediately, versus we paid all this money for an ad spot on, and I have a friend who sells radio ad space, so he's going to kill me if he hears this, but we paid all this money for this spot on the radio, and there's ways to kind of try to, like, oh, if you use this code and this, that, and the other, but that stuff's not as close to 100% locked in as pay-per-click advertising, or even what you can attribute with traffic that hits your site organically. So it's harder. In my mind, I don't see how people justify the return on ad spend as easily with television and things like that, because you know who you're reaching, but you don't know whether that conversion happened.
Yeah. Some people say the safest investment is a Super Bowl commercial.
Well, I mean, there's definitely some really great stories for that, right? There was a Dollar Shave Club. I think he the CEO wrote a letter to the board of directors, I think, and he said, hey, you know, we're about bankrupt. I'm going to Hail Mary it. I'm just going to buy a Super Bowl ad with the remaining advertising budget. And that turned that around, from what I understand. So it works. It definitely works. And I've heard that before, too, where once you start doing things like television advertising, I mean, you're not going to go back. You can't. And I think partly you can't go back because you'll see an increase in sales, but you don't really know. Again, you're not able to attribute all that very well. So it's like, I can't go back because I don't really know why it's working.
Yeah. It's, you know, with like the whole media trends changing, it's just hard for big companies to decide, okay, where to allocate the funds at, put in all of it. Even Snapchat's an option, I think. So, but I mean, you use Snapchat still?
You know, that is one I'm not huge on. I don't, it's just a preference thing. I don't think there's anything, because I do, I'll use, for me personally, I'll use Instagram and Facebook to show a more personal side to like how I do business and my business, but it's still definitely business focused at this point. I'll use it for one thing, and that is when my wife's out of town and she wants to see pictures of the dog. I can pretty easily send her videos of the dog.
Now we know you're a dog person.
Yeah, she won't let me get a cat, so.
So back when you got your real estate license, mm-hmm. What happened then? Like what?
Oh, okay, so the kids were little, right? Okay. My husband was, at the time, he was not down for me getting my real estate license. Mm-hmm. And again, like looking back at through the lens that I, like my mature brain can see through, I understand where he was coming from. At the time, I was like, what the beep are you talking about? Like, where's the mutual support here, you know? So he basically came from a family where his mom was a stay-at-home mom. His dad worked. So that's the family structure that he had set up. Right. And so I think that he just really wanted that for our family. And I did quit my job. I was when I graduated from college, I majored in information systems. And so I came out of college being a system tester.
That's awesome.
And yeah, I was making like 50 grand back then. This is back in 1998, you guys. Okay. Like 50 grand was a lot of money.
That's equivalent to 150 grand today.
I mean, right? I know it's up there. So I was bankrolling back then. All right. So then So he, so long story short, when I got my real estate license, I pretty much had to pay for a nanny or any type of childcare out of my, you know, earnings, because he was like, if that's what you want to do, no. He was like, if that's what you want to do, you have to support that whole, and yeah, it was tough. It was emotionally hard, you know? And so, but I fought through it because it was something that I really wanted to do. And, you know, I wanted to show my daughter that, like, you know, you can be a working mom. You can, you know, have, you know, a career and be a mother. Like, what's up with, like, thinking anything other than that, right?
You had that drive that you couldn't sustain it. Like I mean, yes, housewife is great, but you just...
You see what I'm saying? Like, you could just tell.
You just had to do it.
I had to do something. Like, I felt like I felt like I, you know, I needed to get out and I needed to work and I needed to, like, you know, give and serve. That's really where it comes from. Right. Like, I just, I know that there's a calling on my life, and I haven't always been real clear what it is, mm-hmm. but as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that it really is to just serve. And so got out into the real estate environment, the marriage hit the rocks, we got a divorce. I ended up, like, we got divorced in 2006, I think, is when the divorce became final. And then 2007 and 8 is when the market hit. I mean, the whole market just went into the shitter.
What trend have you been seeing more lately? More like, you know, go to the counter, order pizza, sit down, or, like, you know, or it's still more popular, like, having, like, the waiter serve you. Like, what trend do you think it's, like, the best these days?
If you're in a populated area and you can get away with it, slice shops are really popular. Like, people are opening up slice shops with one or two employees. You have really good slices. They're available all day. People can just walk in, order what they want, and there's a few tables that they sit at, and that's it. It's probably the easiest one to manage as well, because you don't need a wait staff. You don't need delivery drivers. You don't need a ton of employees. You just make a really good pie and come in, pick it up, eat it right there, and you're done. That's the ones that I'm seeing. And, it's trickier if you're in a more rural area, though, for sure.
Yeah. What oven is your favorite oven that you know that good pizza will come out of?
So Fort Sofforni is a friend of our show. I love them. They have the wood-fired ovens. They have all kinds of mobile units. They're definitely the ones that we suggest people check out. Those are the ones that Anthony Falco, Mangieri, Pinello, those guys use. And if those guys are using those ovens, and they're also known as the best pizza makers in the country, then I'm going to suggest those myself.
For you, what's a good pizza?
For me, I love cheese. So this has been a controversy with me and my listeners a while. I always said that I'm going to go into your restaurant and I'm going to try the cheese pizza first, because if you can't make a good cheese pizza, then I don't know if I want to try anything else. That has changed for me a little bit over the years, because someone was like, listen, we're not known for our cheese pizza, but we're known for this pizza, and you should try it. It's really good. So I've kind of steered away from that a little bit, but I'm still, if I'm going to a pizzeria, I really want to try their cheese pizza. I really think that simple is better. I don't love a ton of toppings on a pizza. I love the dough, what kind of sauce you use, a really high quality mozzarella cheese, and just those three factors together should make a really good pizza.
I totally agree. I had this guy who's also a pizza fanatic, and he always told me, try the cheese pizza first. And that you could determine if it's good or not. Have you seen the Instagram, like the Barstool Sports president guy, you know, review pizza every day? What do you think about it? I mean, have you seen it?
Dave Portnoy? Yeah,
yes,
I've seen it.
Dan. Yeah.
So Frank Pinello, who's a friend of mine, who were doing the pizza school together, was just doing something late, and he texted me the other day, or like a couple weeks ago, and he's like, hey, look who I'm with. And he was with Dave Portnoy. Oh, wow. I'm like, oh, get out of here, really? Yeah, I know him. I don't know. Listen, the thing that bugs me about him is he can really affect a business in a good way or a bad way. I think he's kind of responsible with that. You don't see too many really, really bad reviews. But I always tell people, listen, you should, if you run a pizzeria, you should have two photos on the wall, one of your health inspector and one of Dave Portnoy. And you should know who they are. And if they come in, you should serve them your best quality product that you possibly can do.
What would you tell a kid that wants to go to city planning or become a general contractor? What advice would you tell them right now? A kid that's 18-year-old going to college.
I would definitely tell them to learn, you know, to learn a trade, to get an internship, to find out what they want to do before they actually go ahead and pursue to study it. One of my old professors, David Prosperi, he just passed a couple years ago, may he rest in peace, and he told me, and I'm 33 now, and he told me, and I was in grad school, I was 24, he says, come back to grad school when you're 30. Things will make more sense to you. So again, he's a theorist. He wasn't a practitioner in urban planning or land use or public administration, but he was, and I think about that all the time, and I'm like, well, maybe it would have been harder to get a master's degree now with family and kids and having, you know, all of life's constraints, but I look at learning a lot differently now. I look at learning a lot differently because I have things to apply it to. And I think, like, it's like I wasn't good in algebra, but I really liked geometry because I understood how the algebra was relating to the shapes, right. the geometric shape. So for me, I'm very hands-on. And if something, like I'm not an online learner. If I go to a school and they say, oh, take classes online, I'm an in-classroom learner. I'm everyone has their own learning capabilities. Some people are visual, some people are audio, some people are kinetic learners. You know, I'm more of a kinetic learner from doing.
What is your favorite quote?
One of my favorite quotes is from my great grandmother. And she used to have it on the wall, in her house. And it says, I had no shoes and I complained until I met a man who had no feet. So I thought that was pretty interesting, you know, like a glass is half full quote, you right. know, being that, you know, my wife tells me, you know, a lot to try and be understanding of other people, meaning if you find someone in a hardship situation, figure out and accept why they're in a hardship situation and try and help them. Don't just say, hey, they're a mean person. So try and... You know, try and do your best to understand people. And I think that relates back to that quote in my interpretation. You know, I know some of these things are, you know, can go many different ways. But again, understand someone else's walk of life, if you can.
If you had to write a book, actually, what will the title be?
Oh, man, now you're going to ask me this question. And this is like...
I can guess, but...
You know. You know, I've got a list of potential titles I've written down. I mean, there's like 20 or 30 of them. Wow. And I haven't figured it out yet. But it's going to have like influencer marketing in there, or influencers, that word in there, because I think that that's an important word today and it means a lot. However, it's misunderstood a lot too. So let me give you a for instance, okay? The influencer marketing world, if you want to call it that, is changing pretty rapidly. And I've seen it from the beginning to now because I've been so involved in it in every step of the way. What I mean by that is it's changing in that if you go to LinkedIn, for instance, like you and I were talking about different social platforms before, the conversation about influencer marketing is much, much different than you'll hear or see on Facebook. Okay. And that's a good indication of where everything's going. So on Facebook, influencer marketing to those people is media buys. Okay. It's online, it's digital marketing. So it's just buying some space on an influencer's Instagram feed. And it's hopefully going to drive, you know, some awareness and traffic back to your landing page or your affiliate or whatever you're selling, whatever you're marketing. That's the way to look at it. So it's an advertising buy, right? It's a media buy, right? You're just buying a small piece of a small billboard, but that billboard speaks to your target market is looking at that billboard, right? So instead of a billboard by the highway, which is like consider that traditional advertising, right? It's just a giant billboard. You know, you see these things, 1-800 lawyers, you know, whatever it is,
especially lawyers,
or some car thing or whatever it is, right? And it's just a general advertisement to the general public. Well, these media buys, these people are doing are very specific and they're targeted, which is good, but it's just media buys. It's not influencer marketing. Okay. So you're just buying space on an influencer's feed. That's all it is. There's no co-creation of content for the most part. There's no content that's going to resonate any longer than maybe 24, 48 hours, right? The kind of content I'm talking about is something that if you co-create a series of blog posts or something or videos with an influencer, that content is long form content and it can resonate with your audience for months, if not years.
You know, the Bible talks about more about fear not mm-hmm. than love.
Absolutely.
Can you believe that?
Yeah. I believe so. I really do. And I think because who doesn't go through it? Like
everyone does, man. We're human.
We're human. We experience fear. We experience failure. Like, you know, it's so interesting. Like we could read in scripture where God like gives this whole, you know, long chapter of all these great men and what they've done. But then it goes back like a chapter before that, right? And I think he probably, like, if we look back at that, we're like, oh, yeah, but he failed in this area. But this one failed in this one. Like, it was like, can you imagine, like, all these things that would have been crossed off? Can you imagine how many times we're crossing ourselves off because of our failures? And I think that's, it's tough. I believe if you don't have a community of people, if you don't have support, if you don't have a willingness and an effort to just even try, man, you will never, like, be happy. You'll never be satisfied. And here's the thing. You can pray all you want. You can have everyone pray for you. You can be great at church and never step out in your potential. Wow. Never. I've seen people like, I know people like that. Wow. Right? They're waiting for like the Jack in the Box. Remember the Jack in the Box?
The restaurant?
No. Well, yeah. I mean, the restaurant's great. But like when I grew up, the Jack in the Box was obviously the thing you'd crank like. Right? And then like waiting for like this blessing to pop out. If I just keep like turning it around and it's like, okay, like I can't do that for you. And as a coach, what I figured out. And here's the thing. People say, you know, is it life coaching? Is it business coaching? Is it this? I just say like this, man. If it's your business, if it's your leadership, it's all part of your life. Like there's not like these different like areas, right? If I'm suffering in my business, how much does that affect my life? Right?
A lot, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
So, but I usually consider myself as a leadership coach because I really believe that and understanding that I'm attracted to people who have vision. I'm attracted to people who have something at stake, that they're willing to risk something and also lose something and gain something along the way.
What's your favorite business book?
How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's not really a business book per se, but it just probably the most important skill in business that I've through experience and also just through mentors telling me is communication and social intelligence, like the ability to deal with people and to understand people's emotions and their wants and needs and to be able just to navigate that. That's probably the most important skill to have in business starting out, even public speaking as well. And How to Win Friends and Influence People really describes how to deal with people and how to make them feel appreciated and just how to deal with employees, customers, clients, etc. in a way that's going to help not only them feel appreciated, but then you progress your career and just get to where you want to get to. So How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Yes, which I heard great a lot book. About that book. Yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of entrepreneurs say that. And who is your favorite entrepreneur?
Gary Vee, yeah. I have to say. He's obviously, that's most people's answer nowadays if you are on social media. But I just like his rawness and the fact that he gives away such valuable advice for free. And he really is just trying to help. He's not really trying to sell you his real estate course or sell you this and that. He's really just trying to help you out. And obviously, he makes money off his social media. It is what it is. Whatever. It's fine. And it helps his brand. But just from what I've learned from him so far, that's really helped me more so than anything I've learned in school. And even more so, like other things that I've watched online for my marketing agency. Like a lot of his philosophies and teachings, I take and I implement for my clients in terms of the branding side of things. So definitely Gary Vee.
And how can people reach you for any information about your agency?
Great question. Or anything? So my Instagram is Alex Albron. A-L-B as in boy, A-R-R-A-N as in Nancy, _. So Alex Albaran _ on Instagram and Twitter. And my company website is albrandsports.com.
Alex, I really, really,
thanks
really,
for having me on, man. This has been really great.
really grateful to have you. I think you definitely, you know, you have a lot more, like, you are, like, way ahead than most 20-year-olds I've met. And definitely that, like, the whole MMA agency, I think that's huge. I think it feels like it's untapped in a way-ish.
Absolutely. In terms of, like, I don't really like to hit on other people in the industries that I work in, but, like, I'm talking about, like, real professionals getting in and giving each fighter the attention they need in terms of helping them brand themselves and getting them the right fights at the right money for the right contract, like, really helping them brand themselves. Right. I think Vanish Sports, Gary Vee's sports agency, they're doing that in the NFL where they're not only being their agent, but they're also helping them with the marketing side of things in terms of social media and branding themselves. I think I'm going to bring that to the MMA industry, so all my fighters are going to have more followers and more exposure on YouTube as well, and then it's going to lead to more sponsorships for them and because they have more exposure. So it's just, it helps them, it helps me, it helps just, it's going to help the whole industry as well.
Helps the sport.
It helps the sport because the more fighters promote themselves, the more people are going to watch them fight, and the more people are going to watch MMA in general. So the better that these fighters can brand themselves and the more I can help them do that is only good for me, them, the promoter, the sport in general. It's a win-win all around. So that's really one of my main goals with this.
Alex, thanks for coming to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Anytime, man. Anytime.